This is Geek News Central. My name is Todd Cochran, and the stories that lead today's show are as follows. Congratulations to SpaceX. Privacy? Well, now it's in your hands. Got a Game of Thrones teaser for you. Looks very exciting. We're going to talk about a blackmailer that got arrested. And boy, what a dummy. We're going to talk about a record-setting woman spacewalker. Pretty exciting stuff for the ladies out there. We're going to talk about some Twitter stuff tonight that is driving some folks mad, but making other folks glad. Plus all the news of the day. I want to welcome you to episode 1189 of the Geekness Center podcast for Thursday. Oh my goodness, March 30th. This show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com and listeners just like you. Great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknesscentral.com/GoDaddy. Support for this show can be done a number of ways by going to geeknesscentral.com/insider, paypal.me/geeknews. Again, supporting the sponsor at geeknesscentral.com/GoDaddy. And you can pick up Ohana gear at cafepress.com/Ohana store. And of course, we definitely want you to take time to visit. If you're brand new to the show, we want to welcome you to the podcast. And it's real easy. Just go over to geeknesscentral.com. Check out the website. Check out all the great content being written, produced by my writing team. And of course, subscribe to the show on the right-hand column of the website, whether it be via iTunes, on Android, via email, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, whatever suits your fancy. We definitely want you to get subscribed to the show. And then there's a link on the site as well for the newsletter. So definitely get connected with that. That way you'll never miss a single episode. For all of our longtime Ohana, all of our longtime listeners and viewers that are part of the family here, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the show. And as always, your commentary is always welcome via email at geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, on Twitter at Geek News. You can chat along with the rest of the Ohana on the Slack channel by requesting access to it by sending me an email. You can follow on Google Plus or on Facebook. You can, of course, watch this show on the Roku via the Tech Podcast channel. You can watch or listen on the Apple TV. You can listen on the Amazon Echo by telling Alexa to play the latest edition of this show's name. You can listen on Stitcher, watch or view on Blueberry.com. On your Google Home device, you tell the device to play the podcast Geek News Central. That's the command for your Google Home device. So definitely make that happen if you've got a Google Home application. Of course, we want to not forget about our partner shows. No Better Than Average with Jacob and Jeff, The Gadget Professor, Mr. Don Bain, The Pro Gear Site, written by my GNC team, the Podcast Legends site, of course, as well. But anyway, this show would not be possible without our sponsor, and our sponsor has been with us the longest of any sponsor known in the podcasting space, been here with us since July of 2005. So we're fast approaching 12 full years of sponsorship by GoDaddy.com. And really, it's all about the deals. It's all about the products and services over there. We want you to take advantage of those deals. As a matter of fact, I already did the site transition today because what happens is, if you go over to geekcenter.com/GoDaddy, it takes Google a couple of days to re-index the page when you change the title. So I've already got the April listing up, and just to be between you and me, the codes are the same. If you've been here for a while, it's the same savings, so you know what you're getting. If you're brand new, which many of you are, because we have new listeners on every show, and you want to become a podcaster, blogger, if you want to start your own website, you want to build your own business, or you have a business and you're looking for a fresh look, really, I've got a product here for everyone. 30% off on new product purchases. 99cent.com, so you can use that one time. We got a month free trial of GoDaddy website builder with your choice of personal business or business plus plans. We've also got our $1 a month economy hosting, includes a free domain for the first year, or $1 a month managed WordPress hosting for the first year, which it also includes a free domain. All my codes start with CJC, followed by GNC, and then the specific offers, CJC GNC 30, CJC GNC 99, CJC GNC free, CJC GNC 1HS, and CJC GNC WP 1. Now, that's a mouthful, but don't despair. Just go over to the website at geeknewscenter.com/GoDaddy. And I have to mention, I had a full phone schedule this morning. I woke up at 4:30. At 5, we were supposed to start the recording of your podcast. I'll talk about that in a second. A little bit late getting started, but at 6, my time, I had a scheduled call with the GoDaddy team. They, a couple weeks ago, took me through a demo of a brand new or enhanced offering. I'm just, and we're getting the deal in place. So I can't talk about it yet because I want to save it so that when the new deal's in place and I send you there, that I get the right type of credit and compensation, if you know what I mean. But had a great discussion with the team. I talked about a lot of things. GoDaddy's actually getting back into advertising and podcasts. We talked about how the space has changed since they started back again with me in July of 2005. Kind of did some, about 30 or 40 minutes of education on that. 20 minutes of talking about this stuff. So excited about some things coming down the pike with GoDaddy. So we're going to be doing some special demos and all kinds of, but they're getting the compensation plan together because I really want to do it right and I want to talk about it, but you're not going to go wrong with any of the deals that are on the website right now. Not at all. Okay. Just I'm going to add a little sugar to everything that that we talk about with them. But again, go over to geeknewscenter.com/GoDaddy. Had a great time talking with the team. So anyway, look forward to be able to talk about this more in the future. And it's really, to me, it wowed me. And then I told you that a couple of weeks ago. So that is forthcoming. And I'll keep you advised, of course. And you'll hear it here first, of course, right? Okay, let me look at my little stack of, it's never slow around here. I never have a down week. But I tell you what, yesterday, got home and we'd just been running crazy and I jumped in the shower. I got the grime off after, doing everything that you do in a, day's worth of busy work. And got some dinner and I told my wife, I'm going to bed. And I was in bed by 9. Unheard of for me. And of course, for many of you, like, that's my normal go to bed time. For me, it's not. But I was up at 4:30. So not that, in the scheme of things, not that much, but it just once in a while you gotta take a little bit of extra. I know you guys don't wanna hear about my sleeping habits, but to be frank, sometimes you just have to do it. But I was excited this afternoon. Got a call from SIGS, which is a body shop here in Hawaii. They are, my car's out of paint, out of whatever they do. They say they're putting the windows back in. I'm like, you had to take the windows out to fix a dent? I just was like, what? So, putting the windows back in, they said, I might get it back tomorrow. I hope so, because I'm driving a Hyundai rental car that I'm ready to Hyundai back to the rental car place. So hopefully I get my car back tomorrow, but we'll see about that. Recorded your podcast. Yes, that's a podcast Mike Dell and I are doing at blueberry.com. It will come out on Monday. We record it on Thursday, and then he either records or I record. This morning I did, and got it edited and got it sent over to him, so he'll have the blog post up Monday at powerpresspodcast.com. Full weekend ahead, 2 soccer games. Son is in, he wraps up one game at 12, we immediately have to get in the car and race across town because his next game starts at 1. So he's going to be a busy dude for a couple of hours, and I'm, you know, the taxi cab getting him back and forth. But we hope to get some drone flying time in. We haven't flown the drones in a while, and I put them on the charger, both of them on the charger today, make sure the batteries were powered up. And so I'm excited maybe to potentially get some drone time. Now, I got a friend that I follow on Facebook, and he follows the show. He was in Cincinnati recently, and he was flying his Mavic, and he got into a situation where the drone kind of lost its way. And this is what happens if you haven't flown a drone before. Big cities, you have to be really, really careful. If you've driven through big cities where there's tall skyscrapers, the GPS signal can get all kinds of wonky. It can shift and put you on another street, and all kinds of, you can get in between microwaves. I think I talked a little bit about this on a previous show, but the hotel that it crashed on is on a ledge somewhere. Apparently they recovered it and they called him, and actually he's going to get it back. I don't know if it's been water soaked or what. He'll find out soon, but be careful where you're flying your drone. And I will be doing that this weekend and flying legally as well. And then in Hawaii, that can be a challenge at sometimes because of the proximity to airports, and I'm on an island. But from a gym standpoint, got to the gym Monday, but it's been sucking ever since. I had, I got to gym Tuesday. Wednesday, my son had soccer practice. Obviously, today's the show. So tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday, going to three gym days in a row. Got to get below 200. That's my goal. I want to get below 200 before I leave for CES in 3 weeks. And not getting the gym as often is not helping. But anyway, I've just chit-chatted way too much here. Thanks, everyone, for being here. And Troy, thanks for... you're out here this week. That was cool. And thanks for just drop me a note. So I do want to also mention that, I don't know, see, I have to think how he's related. So it would be my aunt's son's child. I got that right. So he would be a second cousin? I guess that would be right. His name's Colton. Matter of fact, Colton, I think you're watching a live show tonight. Colton's doing a new podcast, a new sports podcast. So Colton, if you're still watching, you're still watching the show, put me the URL in the chat session here, and we'll share it with the audience. But so I'm going to chit chat with him and talk about his podcast. I think we're doing that tomorrow. So, giving him some tips and advice. But anyway, that's kind of what's going on. Let's go ahead and get into the sack of stuff I've got for you tonight. And let me get everything out of the way. Bada bing, bada boom. All right, first things up. Let's talk about SpaceX. Man, oh man, congratulations to them. They have made aerospace history today with the successful launch and landing of a quote-unquote used rocket. Really, after more than 2 years of landing its rockets after launch, crashing some, blowing some up, tipping them over, but recently having a good spate of success, SpaceX has finally sent one of its used Falcon 9 back into space. The rocket took off from Cape Canaveral this evening, sending a comm satellite into orbit, and then landed back at SpaceX drone ships floating in the Atlantic Ocean. And it was round two for this particular rocket, so which already launched and landed during a mission into April of last year. But the Falcon 9 relaunch marks the first time an orbital rocket has launched to space for a second time. I really would love to see and see the cost breakdown. We've talked a little bit about this already. But, you know, they talk about the fairing. Okay, so on the top of the rocket, you got the satellite, right, that's going to be launched. And inside or outside of that, protecting it, is the fairing that is, protecting the gear on the way to orbit. That fairing cost, according to Elon Musk, a couple million dollars. It's pretty amazing that it would cost that much. But if you think about it, $400-500 million satellite, you have to have a pretty protective shroud around it. And then when it gets to space, the shroud splits. And those pieces are generally never recovered. So they're actually working on now the ability to bring the shrouds back too. And I have no idea how they're going to fully accomplish this, but they're designing the shrouds now to be able to get the right angle for re-entry, and then basically be slowed down by a parachute and ultimately be grabbed or hooked by some sort of air mechanism. So they would have a helicopter or an aircraft with a tow line, and basically the goal would be to come in and grab it before it ended up in the ocean. So this is going to be the next round of what they're potentially going to do here. So this mission tonight by them was a critical milestone for SpaceX. And again, they've been working to make its rockets, you know, partially reusable since as early as 2011. And now, bada bing, bada boom, they've successful launch. So congratulations to SpaceX here. And I didn't get to see the live launch, but I did get to watch the replay, and it was pretty cool. The folks over at The Verge put together a compilation of GIFs, and this is kind of funny because, you know, it's just like cleaning an office. You have to make a mess before you can, you know, really have things get to the point where they need to be, and that means they had to crash a few to learn some lessons. So The Verge had a GIF, put a GIF together of every successful and failed SpaceX Falcon 9 landing attempt. So, you know, the first one, and if you think about it, the first attempt was January of 2015. And then attempt number two was in April, and that one didn't end so well. they blew that one up. And then, what's wrong with this browser? You know, sometimes Firefox simply gets a mind. Oh yeah, Shockwave plugin. This is the guilty. You know, please let us stop using that piece of trash. Drives me crazy. All right, I'm going to wait for you, but the audience can't wait. But anyway, I have the link up the show notes, and it basically shows these landing attempts and what transpired. So I'll leave it at that. And then we'll cover it in the next, or basically it'll be up in the show notes, all right? Okay, you cannot do this to me. It's very, very irritating because what happens is, and I'm looking here, what's going on is sometimes we lose sync with YouTube, which it looks like we are. I have no idea why. So YouTube is crashing tonight, which is not good. I wonder if that's happening on Facebook as well. Now the health is good. Okay, well, you know, you would think, here's the thing about doing live, and those of you that are listening to the show later, you don't care. I have a good bandwidth up. But it just seems that there are times when you can have all the upload speed in the world, and it doesn't matter a darn bit. So any of you that are watching on YouTube, come over to facebook.com/Cochrane, and you can watch over there. Facebook doesn't seem to have a problem, but definitely YouTube does, which just, you know, maybe I'm just going to have to give up do anything on YouTube and just upload the videos later. That may be what it's going to come to. Okay, so moving on here. Game of Thrones first season 7 teaser is out. And for those of you that are Game of Thrones fans, you're going to want to watch this teaser. It's about 90 seconds. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but It's really good. And we're getting close. Season 7 premieres July 16th. So we're still a few months away, but I'm excited. You guys excited for Season 7 of Game of Thrones? Cannot wait. All right, let's talk about the 20-year-old who's been arrested on suspicion of blackmail. Do you remember just a few weeks ago that a Turkish crime family basically was looking for $100,000 of gift cards from Apple? Well, the police have arrested a man in the UK suspected of extortion and what they're calling a Computer Misuse Act offenses. And purportedly, this individual, who lives in a North London address, basically has been rolled up, and he may be one of the guys behind this caper. He may be the mastermind or an accomplice to this this blackmail that they were trying to, go against Apple, saying that that they'd been hacked. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here. This is the guy. It's funny here, Turkish crime family, yet he's being arrested out of UK. He still might be Turkish, who knows, but I guess that gift card extortion racket potentially has not worked out so well for him. Ladies, you're going to want to give this woman just an absolute round of applause. Astronaut Peggy Whitson is no stranger to breaking barriers. In addition to becoming the first woman commander of the International Space Station, the Iowa native has logged 377 days in space between two missions, the most of any American spacewoman to date. Now on her third mission aboard the International Space Station, Whitson is racking up even more impressive feats. Today, she performed her eighth spacewalk, setting a record for the most spacewalks performed by a woman. The purpose of the spacewalk is to adjust a docking port, which will essentially be a parking spot for SpaceX and Boeing's commercial crew capsules. At around 8 p.m. Eastern, Whitson and ISS Commander Shane Kimbrough began their preparations. So she has logged 50 hours. And the previous female record holder was Sunita Sunny L. Williams, who logged 50 hours and 40 minutes. Then, and what's interesting is that the most experienced spacewalkers is Antoloy Solovev of Russia for 68 hours, and former Mike Lopez 67 hours. After today, Wilson will have accumulated 59 hours in spacewalking, and it could grow. So she's really only two spacewalks away from being able to say, I'm the champ, I'm number one. So because they do what, 6 hours outside the International Space Station. So, I think we should all be rooting for NASA to put some more spacewalks on for her. It'd be nice to see her break the all-time record. But exciting things for her. So, ladies, congratulations. And, of course, to this woman in space, congratulations to her as well. Massive achievement to be number, at this point, number three, but number one in the woman's category. So awesome. Hey, if you're a blogger, if you are a podcaster, you may sometimes be not considered press, depending on which state you're in and some of the things that you do. And most bloggers and podcasters, if they follow the basic journalistic rules, they're pretty much protected. You can still get sued, but you can do a lot of things to, basically prevent yourself from getting sued. But, there's been plenty of debates on whether bloggers should be considered journalists, and specifically if they should qualify to be protected by journalist shield laws. Court rulings on this have been somewhat of a mixed bag, with some courts saying that bloggers don't qualify for state shield laws. But over in Pennsylvania, there's a recent ruling that went the other way. The case filed in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, and heard in a local state court, found that the blogger who runs Beaver Countin, C-O-U-N-T-I-A-N, need not respond to a subpoena demanding IP addresses of others and other identifying information of various commenters on the website. The lawsuit was brought by Connie Javens and Renee Javens against a bunch of John Does, who they accuse of posting defamatory comments on the website. The court carefully reviewed Pennsylvania's journalistic shield law and found that the operator of the Beaver Contain is pretty clearly covered. It first notes there's no requirement that the publication be a print publication and further highlights that the operator of the site, John Paul Varancevich, oh my gosh, clearly does journalism with posts to the site. So he's got a good ruling from the court. The court did say that some of the other John Doe commenters are not protected by the shield law, as there's nothing in the record to indicate they were the source of information to the website, but he did not have to give up the information. So this is a big win for bloggers and can start to set some case law, especially at the state level, which, you know, could get appealed, and, you know, and if that's upheld, that just continues to give bloggers more protection on their content and or the commenters on their website. So I think this is pretty awesome, pretty good decision. So we'll keep you advised on that. All right, on Twitter. Oh my goodness, my. Some people, if I read the PC World article alone, I would say, woohoo, what they've done with the Twitter reply is awesome. But if I read the one from the motherboard, the guy's saying this new Twitter at replies are giving me an ulcer. And really what it boils down to here is that now on Twitter, when you reply, they don't include the Twitter username in your 140 character count. So, but what's scary about this is now you can reply and have like 10 people in the reply line. So what I've seen happen, I've seen this actually already start to happen, is we've had, for example, podcasters will tweet the link to their episode on Blueberry. And some of those tweets have been pretty decisive in political nature. So it'll be the podcaster's tweet, and then it'll have at Blueberry, and then the URL to their episode link on blueberry.com. And then that will start into this Twitter reply war where people are going back and forth. And because of this new feature, and I was wondering how we were getting carried over, every time someone hits reply, it adds everyone to the reply line. So we end up getting ding, 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 ding all day long on this tweet that we had. It's basically one of our customers that's tweeting a link to his episode. We don't want to really be in the reply chain to this because it makes it look like we've kind of weighed in when we haven't. So, this is the bad thing about this new at reply tool. While it gives us more characters, it will cause an ugly chain of people to be added, and it could potentially just be a mess. Tagging people out is difficult. It just doesn't quite work the way you want it. You say it should be just easy, just, you know, be able to X those folks and get rid of them on that reply line, because the people you're replying to are no longer in the actual text box. That's the problem and thereof. So all of you are going to get a chance to see this, all of you that use Twitter. The folks over at PC World were kind of like, oh, this is fantastic. And, you know, the Twitter representative said, oh, we're still improving it. But I think public opinion will come out pretty fast on where this lays in a from a standpoint of popularity, and if Twitter will have to go back and tweak it again. Alrighty, can you believe that RSS is really not that old. It's 15 years. RSS has been really more than widely adopted. I guess that's a better thing to say. Dave Weiner over at scripting.com, he says, in early 2002, my company Userland Software shipped a product called Radio Userland, basically a very early blogging platform. It was a combination blogging tool and RSS reader. It was basically an open precursor to Twitter with no 140 character limit. Anyone could produce an RSS feed and anyone could consume it. He says, because of this openness, a market grew up around it, and being open had its disadvantage as well. Change came slowly, if at all. At some point, we couldn't add features because the community was so unwieldy and, from our point of view, uncooperative or even hostile. So he just basically goes to talk about RSS a little bit. And he says, anyway, here we are 15 years later. Facebook and Snapchat are out there too. But guess what? The engine underneath it all is still there. The heart is still beating. The feeds, aka the RSS feeds, are still feeding. And I use RSS to do all my show prep. I use Feedly, FeedlyFeedly.com. I have all these feeds from sites that I've, you know, accumulated and you guys have suggested over the years. As a matter of fact, if you find a good source for a site, definitely always send that to me, because I'm always adding and subtracting sites that are went dead or whatever. But RSS is the heart of the podcasting space too. I live and breathe this, folks, because, as a matter of fact, I'm a very outspoken proponent of controlling your RSS feed, because it's really the single most important item in a podcaster's intellectual property stack. And for many podcasters, they don't control their RSS feed. They allow some third party to control it. And you guys are subscribed to Geek News Central. You subscribe to the RSS feed on geeknewscentral.com, not at some third-party site. So, but anyway, 15 years. Good reflection by Dave. I'll have that up in the show notes for you as well. Of course, a big announcement was the Galaxy S8 and the S8 and the S8 Plus. Lots of reviews out there already. The new phones will ship on April 21st for between $750 and $850. The Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus, oh, respectively. So $750 for the S8, $850 for the S8 Plus. Just like the normal carrier versions, but we've confirmed they're only available in AT&T and or Verizon flavors for now. Wow, so you T-Mobile folks won't get them initially. If you're looking for a totally unlocked version of the phone, you can take it to any U.S. carrier. This isn't the one. Wow. So we'll see here what happens. But anyway, the S8 is forthcoming. Lots of reviews. I'm not even going to try to walk through it, because I've already seen probably 10 YouTube videos. It looks like a sweet phone. It's taller. The Plus is taller and skinnier than the iPhone 7 Plus. But I think it's got some edges one way or the other over the iPhone, and, you know, vice versa. But if you're an Android user and you kind of got burnt by the last Samsung announcement, then you can grab one here on April 21st. So let me talk a little bit. You know, I think it's total karma. I was on Google Plus yesterday. And this guy was telling me all about this app called Telegram. And I really, to be honest with you, I'm not familiar with Telegram. That was my first exposure to it. So what do I see today on makeuseof.com website? I see you can now use make encrypted voice calls using Telegram. So it's just like, it's karma. You know, I talked to someone about this, and this app, I guess, has been around for a while. Again, there's how many apps? 500,000 of them. You can't keep track of them all, right? But apparently now Telegram will allow you to make encrypted voice calls. So it appears to be a platform for secure communications. Yeah, okay. Interesting stuff. Interesting news. Probably will try the app at some point. And if you're using Telegram, what are you using it for? Love to hear about it. but it's interesting that they're using end-to-end encryption on this. And you add encryption to a voice, any voice call, there's overhead in that. So I'm curious to see how the audio sounds when you're doing an encrypted voice call to someone, a telegram to telegram voice encrypted call, how it, if it, does it sound just like a regular phone, or does it sound a little bit garbled? For any of you that have ever had the experience of being able to talk on a truly secure phone, one that is it, basically a phone that is running a encryption standard that is pretty significant, if you've ever talked on one of those phones, you'll know that there is some degradation to the voice quality. So so it's be curious to see how well this does from an audio quality standpoint. It's also would be curious to hear what their encryption level is. They say it's 100% secure. So, all right, tell me more. How are you making that happen? Are they changing the keys every day? I you know, that's the question. Is it the encryption built in? So I'm looking for more information on this. And, you know, this, I know that there's already encrypted apps like WhatsApp and so forth where you can do encrypted chats back and forth. But anyway, interesting move here by the Telegram app. Many of you may be looking for a deal. And again, it's, I do like what Engadget has done in this particular article. They've got something called the Wirecutter, the Wirecutter Best Deals. And they say this post was done in partnership with the Wirecutter at WRCTR.co. It's a buyer's guide to the best technology. And when readers choose to buy, just as a disclaimer here, the Wirecutter's independent chosen editorial picks may earn an affiliate commission that supports their work. So, but they have a list of deals, and the folks at Engadget were highlighting a couple of deals, but I went over to their actual website, and let me load this up here for you to see. And let me load this. Yeah, my YouTube stream is horrible tonight. Live stream is fine. So let me bring this page up. So they basically find deals. And it's everything from audio cameras, computers, headphones, refurbished gear, you name it. So they have a list of deals, and it's actually at the wirecutter.com is the page. So if you're looking for savings and basically probably biased reviews at the same time, definitely check that out. But they got a 55-inch TV that from Sony that's on sale right now for $1,290, originally like $2,400. So I have that link up in the show notes for you to check out. All right, Tesla Model Y details may be revealed next week, so be aware of that. That's forthcoming. Also, the folks over at Lyft, they say they're launching a commuter shuttle service. The new service is being tested in San Francisco and Chicago. And yes, it's basically a bus. So it's available only during commute hours, 6:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on weekdays. Lyft says its shuttle cars will cost a fixed price that won't be subject to surge pricing during high-demand commuting hours. Lyft says the cost of a shuttle ride will vary depending on the length of the trip. A screenshot from the company shared with BuzzFeed suggests a benchmark price for a shuttle ride is $350. Lyft says shuttle is an extension of its Line service, a cheap and popular carpool feature that isn't competitive with Uber Pool. Lyft Line is the future of rideshare, and they test new features that we believe will have positive impact on passengers' transportation needs. So a Lyft spokesperson said drivers will earn the same amount of driving shuttles as they do driving Lyft Line. So to book a shuttle ride, passengers type in their destination, get matched with the Lyft shuttle route, and then walk to the pickup spot. Commuters trying to make the morning meeting can't expect shuttle to estimate how long it will take. to walk to the pickup spot, how long the drive will be, and how long it will take them to walk from the drop-off point to the final destination. So it's basically like taking the bus, except this is not necessarily door-to-door. And but Lyft Line is a door-to-door. Oh, it is door-to-door hail ride. So they've got a list of the San Francisco shuttle routes, and this is basically within the actual central city. So very, very cool. I just think this is this could be the future, really. You know, go a couple blocks, get in a Lyft with three other people, and takes you to work. You know, I've seen taking my kids to school so often. I see just me and just like one or two people in the vehicle, and you know, a lot of parents doing transporting kids around here. They should really, someone could really do well in pairing parents up, going to different schools and stuff. It's definitely save people some trips. Already, AT&T scored a $6.5 billion contract to build private wireless broadband network for emergency responders. It's called the FirstNet system. This was a something that was determined was needed after post-9/11. The network is running in the 20 megahertz band in the D-block spectrum space. It will initially operate as a private LTE system that includes wireless data and radio access. The FirstNet system will cover all 50 states as well as tribal lands and will be open to both state and federal agencies with links to local networks and the 9/11 system. In exchange for the $6.5 billion contract, AT&T will operate the network for 25 years, providing its own existing hardware backbone to support the network. Again, the idea was first raised by the 9/11 Commission, which noted that heavy traffic on the commercial wireless network can prevent first responders from effectively communicating in wake of a natural disaster or serious attack. And it's been pitched as a way to ensure that communications links between agencies can stay up in emergencies. The FirstNet system was approved by Congress in 2012, and they did the proposals last year and awarded the bid just recently. So we'll see when this gets up and underway. But to $6.5 billion for AT&T. The FCC, at the same time, has taken a hatchet to a program providing broadband internet for the poor. Yesterday, the FCC commission took on the real threat facing America, poor people who need to get online, according to Gizmodo. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai announced that he would direct the agency to eliminate the federal approved process for broadband providers who want to provide service through the Lifeline program. The Lifeline program isn't quote unquote being killed. It means that groups that want to run it and offer it now have to go through their states. Federal funding will still be available, but it has to be run. Agencies have to run their process through their state agencies, and states have never been involved in this so far. The Lifeline program has been available for more than 30 years. And it provides a subsidy of $9.25 per month for phone service and since 2016 broadband service too. So right now, roughly 3.5 million Americans receive subsidized broadband through the program. The link will be up in the show notes for you to review that. Just like artificial intelligence talent, self-driving talent is fleeing Google and Uber to catch the autonomous gold rush. I guess people are just going everywhere, going to Ford, going to General Motors. They're crossing from one company to the other. They're going to Otto. They're going to Aurora. They're going to Argo. It's just there's a battle for talent right now, and people are opening up their checkbooks in a big, big way, giving stock options. So all these engineers have been involved in autonomous driving. They are suddenly in very, 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 very big demand. And basically can write their own ticket in many of these companies because the competition is so stiff to keep them. This next story should not come as any surprise. With the privacy vote, aka privacy is now mute when it comes to broadband providers being able to sell our data. And again, you now need to start calling your cable provider and start asking them about their privacy policy and what they're doing with the data from you. Said we would talk about VPNs. We'll get I'll get a list together and start sharing that with you soon. But some sites are turning on HTTPS in lieu of this this change. Specifically, some of the biggest adult sites out there are now turning on encryption by default. Just they're trying to help cut down on the amount of information that your hosting provider learns about you. Now, here's the thing. They're still going to know what destination you go to because you have to initiate that. But what you do while you're on those sites will be at least not open for them to sniff and see with the HTTPS connection. So I'll have a link up in the show notes on this. So you can be assured if you're visiting one of the top adult sites that you will be under an HTTPS protocol. Do-it-yourself type of projects are always pretty awesome, and a lot of you like to do those do-it-yourself projects. Matrix Labs released the Matrix Creator. It's a powerful Raspberry Pi accessory that adds a whole bunch of sensors to the miniature computer, including a microphone array, temperature, UV pressure, and more, letting you extend a Raspberry Pi into a full-fledged development device with a ton of different users. And as a follow-up to the Matrix Creator, the company is going even smaller with the Matrix Voice, a cheaper version of the Creator that focuses on one thing, voice recognition, and they're making the Matrix Voice into an Amazon Echo. So there's about a 40-minute video that shows a guy putting one of these together and talks basically through it. So I'll have the link up in the show notes for you to check out. Where Verizon is going to be launching what's called a wireless Cat M1 network nationwide to help the Internet of Things. So many of you probably don't know, but if you have a wireless alarm system, many of you probably had to get upgrades recently because one of the frequencies was being shut down that's been in use for many years, 20, 25 years. That network was essentially a very, very good but slow system. And when it came to alarm systems, slow was good because you just had to send some codes back to the monitoring station in order to know that what's going on in the house, so the alarm, whatever sector. So not a lot of data transforming that network. Well, Verizon is launching this nationwide wireless network designed to help developers, business, utilities, and municipalities deploy secure Internet of Things devices at low cost. The Verizon 4G LTE category M1 will span 2.4 million square miles and be the first of its kind. Many IoT technologies have been slow to catch on, but Verizon's Cat M1 and similar networks will be game changers for IoT deployments. Cat M1 is a low-power, wide-area network technology that competes most directly with other low-power WAN networks. However, Verizon believes Cat M will also compete against Bluetooth, Zigbee, and Z-Wave. Cat M1 completely competes directly with Zigbee, Z-Wave, and Bluetooth, said Mike Lannon, Verizon senior manager. But where Cat M1 may be deployed would be as a water and power meters. And what's interesting about this is that this thing is so low data rate, and the devices are so inexpensive that for devices like asset trackers or power meters, they essentially could not have to have a battery change for 10 years. Now, most batteries won't last 10 years without exploding, but the Cat M1 operates, obviously, as I said, operates at a lower bandwidth, usually between 300 and 400 kilobits, which sometimes is faster than some of the connections I get around here, and would be suitable for wireless connection devices like water meters and so forth. So we'll see where this goes. The chip modules are very inexpensive, but this is kind of a follow-on to some of the stuff that they shut down. But it's going to be targeting the Internet of Things. So very, very cool for those of you that are in business that need some sort of tracking that can handle this Internet of Things type of slow data rate. Any of you using LastPass Well, there's a new LastPass exploit, the third one in recent days. Two of them were patched. The person that has contacted LastPass to talk about this exploit, which he says is significant, is giving LastPass 90 days to patch the issue. And apparently, the flaw is most severe when a user has LastPass binary components enabled. The binary controls some of LastPass advanced features like importing or exporting data, fingerprint authentication, and attachments for secure notes. You may already have it turned on, but there are ways an attacker could trick you into enabling it anyway. Without the binary, the attack can't run arbitrary code in your machine. It still leaves your passwords wide open, though. The exploit was confirmed, and he thinks it's going to take LastPass some time to fix this. But in the meantime, users of LastPass are encouraged to avoid seedy areas of the internet and enable two-factor authentication on all services that support it. There's no evidence that the exploit is active in the wild, but better safe than sorry, because people are going to be going after this now big time. So we'll see how long it takes LastPass to patch this. One thing I do from time to time is oftentimes my son is an event or something and I have to wait for him and I don't want to hang out in the parking lot. So I usually go to a local library and I use my own MiFi card and I go in and grab a table and get some work done while I'm waiting on him. And one thing I notice here in Hawaii is that after school, the libraries are just absolutely packed to the gills with kids. And nearly all of them are either on tablets or they're on laptops. There's a few kids reading books, but they're all there sucking up the free Wi-Fi. And I don't make it a point to go around and look what kids are doing, because I'm sure there's a mixed bag of some of them doing homework, some of them playing games and so forth. But what they're finding now is that libraries have become a broadband lifeline to the cloud for students in basically in districts that where their parents can't afford broadband. My son's school uses Google Docs exclusively. He has to do all of his homework on there. Everything is tied to the cloud. If he's going to do, they have to turn stuff in where they have to record themselves. Like he has to record himself playing his cello. He sends that recording via the internet up to Google Docs and it's sent to the teacher in their education system. But this is big now. There's, you know, the days of turning paper in is very quickly going away. Matter of fact, in the school that my son's at, they have each child in 7th and 8th grade is issued an iPad. Now, they don't get to take it home. They use it at school only. And they basically turn it in at the end of the day to put it on the charger. But that way they assure every kid has a device and has some access to the internet. So, or actually, they're not iPads. They are MacBook Airs. So it's, again, a regular screen, regular keyboard. So what's really happening here then is that these kids are, in at least my son's school, all the kids can use tablets, but if they don't get their homework done, they can't take it home if their parents don't have a laptop. So it's basically libraries are now becoming huge, huge center points for kids that don't have access to the net. And libraries are having to add a lot more computers, put time limits on it in order for kids in some of these areas. So if you've got laptops that are basically you're done with them, but they still work, and you, instead of throwing them in the trash, and hopefully they run a modern operating system like Windows 7, consider donating it to the library. Libraries are looking for more resources these days, and most of these kids are just using a browser to get online and be able to do their homework. So think about reaching out to libraries and see if they'll take your device, your working device. I bet you there's a lot of libraries out there, especially in rural America, that that need more resources, and a great place to donate a laptop that you may have think about selling or just putting in a stack somewhere. Two Middle Eastern airlines are loading laptops and iPads, loaning laptops and iPads. Qatar Airways and Etihad Airways have both launched electronic loaner programs for passengers flying in the upper class cabins. The move comes after both the United States and UK banned inbound travelers flying from a number of Middle Eastern countries carrying electronic devices larger than a smartphone. Qatar Airways announced today it will loan laptops to its business class customers on U.S. bound flights. Passengers can use USB flash drives to store their work. So smart on the airlines. Just, you know, they go out and buy 20 laptops for every airplane to give their business customers. That way they can work while airborne. Very, very smart, given tablets too. Hawaiian Airlines does this automatically. If you're flying on Hawaiian Airlines, you can get a, if you're in first class, they give you a tablet with entertainment options on it. And if you're in coach, you can rent one. This is dirty play. This next article, Miami officials have promised to crack down on Airbnb homeowners who spoke up about bad regulations. There was some folks that went to City Hall to speak out about a new restrictive ordinance that was going into a place that would effectively bar short-time rentals entirely. And even worse, the mayor's been pushing to make things even tougher. Since the current law only is enforced in response to complaints, the mayor is pushing to plan on proactively hunt down homeowners who offer short-term rentals on Airbnb in the Miami area. And here's where things get sketchy. They had this hearing at the hall. People had to register to come and speak. But afterwards, this is what the city announced. We are now on notice for people who did come here and notify us in public and challenge us in public, said City Manager Daniel Alfonso. I will be duty bound to request our personnel to enforce the city code. So they're going to go after the people that came and spoke out against their plan. Wow. It feels pretty sketchy for the government to go after them for trying to speak out. But that's the case. So if you're in Miami and you're doing Airbnb, be aware and keep your head down. Tesla's going to begin taking orders for its solar roof shingles. And he announced that the company will begin taking orders in April and that the roof shingles are tougher than standard roof coverings and can enable an energy independent building. The shingles will begin shipping in volume this summer. How much are they? The solar roof tires are being manufactured by SolarCity. What is the cost? Does it say? SolarCity will target homes with new or serviceable roofs, while solar tiles will be targeted at new construction or replacement roofs. So we'll see where this leads. The cost will vary according to the size of home and house. We're confident with a lease of a slightly below the cost of a regular roof. Well, that's interesting. They say that the roofing will have a 50-year lifespan. So if they say that it will cost a little bit less than a regular roof, how much energy do they put out? That's the question. Pretty amazing. All right, awesome. If any of you think about doing this, please, I want to hear from you. DDR5 memory is on its way. It's being reported to be twice as fast as DDR4. The development specifications for new DDR5 RAM has started to be announced and finalized, but it's supposed to be twice as fast as DDR4. So that's going to help speed computers and bus speeds and all that stuff up. Again, the AI talent is a challenge. But for Google, the AI talent race leads straight to Canada. So check this out. For those of you listening in Canada, they're looking for ideas. It's starting an IA lab in Toronto. So they're going to be looking for employees in Canada to fill the lab. And that's awesome. So I don't have an ad blocker turned on, you Wired. Why are you complaining about an ad blocker? I don't have an ad blocker turned on for you. Oh, maybe I did. No, I didn't. I was complaining that I did. I didn't. Gizmodo found what looks to be FBI Director James Comey's Twitter account. I don't know why this is a big deal, but everybody's talking about it. He had like supposedly 9 followers. I'm not sure quite why they were wanting to follow him, but they have found his Twitter account. I think the director did delete all of his tweets. So he was trying to stay under the radar, but was found out. There's a great article over on randomwalker.info, and it's actually a PDF. And it talks about de-anonymizing web browser data with social networks, and talks about basically there with these new things going on with the new privacy rules being reduced. There's people that want now to figure out what senators that voted for this are doing on the web. And they've basically tried to come up with ways to be able to figure out who they are so that they can basically start publishing the stuff that these senators are doing. So this is a whole article that's talking about how to figure out who somebody is with web browsing data tied to social networks. So we'll see where this leads. I know that there's some bounties out there actually right now to start publishing the information of senators that have voted for the repeal of the privacy stuff from your cable providers. So we'll see where this goes. But people are mad. And as soon as these senators' data starts showing up on what sites they were visiting, they may have a different tune. In Minnesota, senators vote 58-9 to pass internet privacy protections in response to repeal of the FCC privacy rules. So this is something that can happen in your state legislature. If you're not happy, call your state legislature, refer him to this legislation that happened in Minnesota, and see what they can see if they can get this pushed through as well. So the feds don't have to, you can rely on your state to protect you as well. The feds don't have to, they can play big brother by giving someone permission, but the states can come in and states' rights are still king when it comes to this type of stuff. So definitely pass this information to your state legislatures, seeing that the federal has already done their vote. We talked about the mega upload failing drives. Well, the 16 drives are going to be repaired, but no one's going to be allowed to access them. So that's the gist of the court order. So the 16 drives will be recovered, that no one from the RIAA, MPAA, or mega upload will be examined unless they get specific court approval to do so. Also, a lot more batteries going bad. And this one is pretty scary. It's a JBL audio Bluetooth speaker that had a battery in it that caught fire. So keep an eye on your battery powered devices in your home, especially if these devices 2, 3, 4 years old. Start looking at the batteries, looking at the cases. Make sure you're not seeing any warping or expanding. There's usually telltale signs that a battery's going bad, so keep your eye on that. And if you do see a battery that's expanding, please get that outside of your house in an area that will be safe if it decides to short out and catch on fire. The best thing you can do is discharge them as far as you can. That helps as well. But case of a JBL audio Bluetooth speaker burned up in a child's room. Didn't catch the house on fire, but the parents were pretty freaked out. And finally, there's another trailer, War for the Planet of Apes. And I watched the trailer, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I can go see this. Looks pretty violent to me. I guess I won't wait for it to come out on pay-per-view or something. Or, when it's available on HBO at some point. But don't know if I'm going to go to this specific one. War for the Planet of the Apes trailer delivers an emotional punch. And I have a tendency to agree to that as well. All right, we're going to wrap things up here. The end of the show today. And kind of a weird mix of stuff that that came in. And I want to appreciate all of you for listening to the show. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being part of the Ohana. Please support the sponsor. My email is geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, you can follow me on Geek News. Definitely send an email if you have comments. Thanks for being here. Everyone take care. We'll see you on Monday. We're going to take care. Aloha.